The following audio is from Harvest Fellowship. For more information about Harvest Fellowship, visit harvestabq.org.
I don't know about you, but I have thoroughly enjoyed having our announcements done in costume, and I'm thinking about just keeping it going. What do y'all think? It's just so much fun, so much fun. This is going to be an exciting week. Tomorrow is our trunk or treat. This is always a big night for us. We'll have over 1,000 people from our community that'll come and be on our campus, and we're just loving on them and being generous. And I will encourage those of you that'll be here that are serving, be open to the leading of the Holy Spirit for the conversations that He would want you to have with our neighbors as they come, and we're just here with them for a couple of hours. It's going to be a really great night. And then I want to ask you to be in prayer this week. We have a guest that's coming in to help us with some school assemblies. And it was kind of cool. Last Sunday night, I visited the football group. And if you're not in a life group, this is something that's big for us. We say this all the time. We say we don't do life alone. And one of the ways we live that out is in our life groups. And so I went to the football group. They were watching some football game, two teams playing. I don't know who they were. Didn't really matter. I went because they always have good food and because I like hanging out with my friends that are there. And so at halftime, they pause it and they take prayer requests. They pray for each other. And I said, hey, I have one. I said, we're trying to do school assemblies next week. And when we started, we got a lot of initial momentum, a lot of interest, and principals were open to the idea. I said, but it kind of hit a roadblock and we haven't been able to get through it. And so would y'all just pray? And so the group prayed, and we had three schools that had committed as of Sunday night. So we prayed on Sunday, and on Tuesday we went from three schools to six schools, which is pretty awesome. And so we'll be in six public schools this week doing nine assemblies. Some of them are big enough that we have to do two assemblies to get the whole school through. So we'll be in six public schools this week, and I'm just really excited about that opportunity. And so if you'll be in prayer with us this week, we are on a mission to bring hope into the public schools here in Albuquerque. So it's going to be a really great week. So today is going to be fun. Actually, the next several weeks are going to be fun. We've been talking about generosity. We've been in this series called We Live With Open Hands. It's this image of how we want to live when it comes to the topic of generosity. And we've been saying this, and I hope you believe me. I'm not sure yet if you do or not, but generosity is really, it is about money, but it's about actually a whole lot more than just money. And so the next couple of weeks, I actually have some guests that are going to help me as we explore some different topics, all right? So that's why I have the little table and chairs up here this morning. And the idea is that for the next 5 weeks, I have friends that are going to help me. So I can say to you, you don't just have to take my word for it, okay? You can also believe my friends that are going to come and talk to us today. And I'm really excited about today's guest. She's part of our church, and in fact, I'm going to introduce her in just a second. What I want to do is I want to ask you to pray with me, and you're like, I know, we've already prayed a bunch today, I know, but you're in church, it's part of what we do, right? And let me tell you this, today, as we talk about generosity, we're going to talk about how when you live with open hands, it helps you to overcome fear, worry, and anxiety. And let me just ask you a question. How many of you in your life have ever dealt with fear, worry, or anxiety? Any of you? How many of you would be bold enough to say, actually, I'm facing some fear, worry, and anxiety right now in my life? All right, you came on the right Sunday, I'm telling you. Today, our guest is going to help us. We're going to explore this topic. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. So what I'd love to do is I'd love to ask you to pray with me. Just prepare your heart, okay? If you're not there yet, worship probably got you moving in the right direction. But if you're not quite there, would you just take a minute right now and open your heart to what God wants to talk to you about today? Let's pray. Father, thank you for the opportunity to be together and to open your word and to listen. We're listening today for the voice of the Holy Spirit to help us today. And Lord, I pray specifically for those who lifted a hand and have a situation that is causing them to be anxious and worry and fearful. Today, Lord, we believe that your word has some promises that are going to help us to find freedom in those areas. And so we're opening our heart. We're listening for your voice. In Jesus' name we pray. And everyone said, Amen. Our guest today is part of our church, and some of you will know her story or maybe part of her story, but a couple of weeks ago, after the first Sunday we talked about Living with Open Hands, she came running to me, literally, like across the room when I came down off of the stage and shared some things with me, and right then and there I said, you have to help me. You have to help me. You got to tell your story. More people need to hear this. This is going to be so helpful. And so today, would you help me welcome our very own Jen Weaver as she comes this morning to talk to me about living with open hands. Come on, Jen. Oh man, I'm so excited. We do not have snickerdoodles today. I'm sorry, Mitch. She makes really good snickerdoodles. That's why he said that. So, Jen, we're coming up on a milestone in your life, your family's life. November the 11th is a day that you're family will never forget because it started you on this journey. And so I'll start it off this way. Here's what I remember. You and Eric were hosting a life group in your home. We do a life group usually one or two times a year called Newbies. And it's for people who are new to Harvest. And so Lisa and I lead it, but we always look for a host home. And so you guys were hosting for us. We were a couple of weeks in and having a good time. And on the November the 11th, you text us and you said, hey, not feeling real good, maybe we should cancel. And so it wasn't a big deal. We texted everyone and said, hey, you know, Jen's not feeling good, no big deal, we'll meet next week, you know. And we just kind of moved on, you know, and that's where this story begins. So start there, talk to me about like that night and kind of the next couple of days, and tell us your story, especially for those that don't know this part of your story.
And I have notes just because squirrel brain can't always keep things in order. So, we were expecting life group. One of our kids had a cold for like a week and a half before that, but it was just a cold. And then her little sister was like, hey, I'm not feeling so great either. And we thought, oh no, she caught the cold. So we were just going to send him upstairs. Go on, be fine, no big deal, right? Not even worried. And then all of a sudden, I was whammied. And I mean, dizzy, all of a sudden it was just like, I'm weak and spacey. And so I told Eric, you need to text Jason that we cannot do life group because this is not just a normal sickness. And within a couple of days, and even those first couple of days, we just thought, oh, this is just a really bad flu because COVID denial, because, you know, nobody really wants to acknowledge that it's real and it's going to hit you. But it did. We all tested positive within that first week. But, you know, body aches, migraines, all of the fun stuff. And we just thought, okay, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
No big deal.
You weren't worried. No. Eric wasn't worried. We weren't worried. You know, those first couple of days, we were, you know, texting and checking on you. And I think we brought some chicken noodle soup over. And it, you know, just was like, you know, I mean, at that point, you know, 75% of the church had already had COVID. And so we weren't worried. We were none of us were worried. But things continued.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Tell us.
Oh, yeah. So, like, by day 9, November 20th, I'd lost 10 pounds. And, you know, that would have been great had it not been that way because I couldn't eat. I couldn't keep anything down. I couldn't even leave the couch because I seriously felt so sore from head to toe. It was like somebody had like beaten me up and thrown me in the trunk and taken me to a demolition derby. It was awful. And all of us were just super, super weak. But then I couldn't breathe. My nose was so congested. There was no getting any oxygen through my nose at all. And so I'm sitting there gasping, and it was just terrible. So Eric took me to the nearest ER, and he had to wheel me in because I was just too weak to walk. We got in there. They took my pulse. They took my oxygen, and I was like 86%. So they put me on oxygen. They just kind of left me there for a little bit to see how I would do. And then I had to use the bathroom. They took me off the oxygen, walked me there. And by the time I got to the bathroom and out, I dropped down to like 76%. And at that point, you're kind of seeing stars. You're getting a little bit of a black rim around your edges as you get lower into the 70s. And I thought I was going to keel over. So they were like, yeah, we're going to send you home with some oxygen. It'll be okay. And it wasn't until we got home that we looked at the report that they hand you, and I had COVID pneumonia. But they didn't tell me that in the hospital. I had no advice. We had no idea what to do about it other than just keep resting, stay on the oxygen, and hope to God it was going to be fine. But by 2 days later, that was on Sunday, by Tuesday night, I was not fine. No matter what we did, we cranked the oxygen as high as it would go, and I still couldn't even get to 86% this time. And we just knew, if we go back to that hospital, we're going to die. So because they literally ignored me for hours. So we told the kids, can you please pack me a bag? I was listing off stuff. Of course, I'm gasping for air. I'm like, I need this, I need that, and this. And they're running around just packing everything they can think that I might need just in case. And of course, I'm thinking it's going to be another quick overnight stay. It's fine. It's no big deal. And we prayed really quick together. I gave my kids hugs. Eric took me to rest. They put me immediately on a baggie. It's like they gave me oxygen, cranked it up to 15 liters. I was on like 3 or 5, something like that, from the first place. They were like, yeah, that's not enough. And then there's this bag attached to the face mask that is supposedly gives you a whole lot more. Immediately, I was like, oh, okay, this is a miracle. And they're like, yeah, we're going to have to admit you. Hug your husband, and he's got to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're navigating this, tons of unknown.
Oh, yeah.
Every answer you are getting is more and more scary. And they're now admitting you, say goodbye. I mean, as I remember, as we were talking through this story, this was a point where, you know, now there's concern.
Yeah.
Now there's some fear.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Because, well, I'm still thinking, I've got oxygen. This is fabulous. They're going to give me something, and I'm just going to go home tomorrow, and I'm going to be great. And then the doctor looks at me, and he goes, so I'm going to do my best to make sure you get through the night, but with COVID, there's no promises.
Wow. So I want to back up. A few Sundays ago, you come running across to me, and I remember because I'm standing over here, I was talking to someone, but I saw you just like literally running across. I'm like, Jen, this is urgent. So I finish, and I look at you. I'm like, Jen, everything okay? And you said something to the effect of, Pastor, generosity or living with open hands saved my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, tell me about this. And so you start telling me, and that's when I said, we've got to talk about this. Because to be honest, like, we walked through this with you and Eric and the girls. Like, we were with you and checking on you and stopped by the house. But like, there's parts of this story. This is one of them. I never knew. I never knew this part of the story. So tell us this part of the story, because this is a turning point in this idea that living with open hands helps us overcome our fear and worry and anxiety. So it saved your life. Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, I am that girl who has struggled with fear. I mean, Eric teases me because I would be like, I think I was 25 or 26, and I would still skip that like 2-foot perimeter around the bed and like leap into bed because something's going to get me. So fear and I were friends for a long time. anxiety, depression, worry, a lot of that stuff is a very big part of my story. So laying there in the hospital with these words in my head, it's sitting there, and all of a sudden it becomes like really, really real for the first time, because I'm thinking, I'm going to be fine. This is fine. And then he's like, hopefully you'll make it through the night. What? And so I'm just laying there, and all of a sudden God just brings pictures to my mind, because I don't even think Jason knows how often he uses that phrase, living with open hands. And if you've been here for any length of time, you've probably heard it and maybe you've noticed. But it is. It is just something you weave into lots of different messages. And so we had just covered All In the year before. And, you know, Eric and I started really contemplating that idea. But I'm just laying there in the hospital, and God is just talking to me as I'm praying. And I'm like, Lord, I have to give this to you. Because if I don't give this to you, then I'm holding on to myself too tight. And he's like, open your hands.
By yourself.
Okay.
In a hospital room.
Yes.
With and a mask on.
Exactly. And you know, I've had conversations with God all of my life. Like, Lord, I want to live to be an old lady. I only get to do this once on this planet. So please, please let me get the most out of it. And so right then he's just like, you know, you have to trust me. If you call me, if I call you home, that's my call. I am enough. I will be enough for your family. I will be enough for your husband. I will be enough for your kids, and I will be enough for you. And I just did. I remember laying there, closing my eyes. Okay, Lord. And I just pried my hands open, and I just laid there, literally opening my hands and just surrendering myself and surrendering my heart and surrendering my life in a way that, as a lifelong Christian, I had still never fully done.
Wow. Let me ask you a question. We scripted this, so we had a kind of a roadmap, but yeah. This isn't on the script. I'm curious, as you laid there and you prayed that prayer of surrender, what was the hardest thing for you to really give up in that moment? Was there a part, was there something that was harder than the other things to really surrender to the Lord that night?
Just honestly, just life itself, because that has always been one of those fears. You know, you have kids and you worry, you know, who's going to raise my kids if something happens to me? Yeah. And, you know, in a perfect world, everything will work out and be beautiful, but you still have that fear in the back of your head. And that was definitely just literally my whole life was right there. And having to open up and be like, okay, I really do trust that if this is it, this is it, but you got it.
Yeah. I think we have a few pictures from these couple of days in the hospital, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. Or so
show a few and tell us.
Well, yeah.
That's you?
Yeah, that's me. That's when I got there. That's probably the scariest, worst picture I have. So if that one's bothering you, it'll disappear in a minute. So. yeah, but that's, I mean, obviously you can tell that's not how I like to look. So, yeah. And I mean, I spent the next several days in the ER, because they had to wait for a room to open up. And I was just praying, you know, God, please let a room open up because somebody gets to go home and not home. That would be really amazing. And they put me on all kinds of medications, things I'd heard scary stuff about. And so it was just like every little thing was more opportunities for fear to take a root. You know, we're going to put you on this and hopefully it'll work. Wait, but that medication there killed somebody I know. So, and God, every time, just trust me. Just trust me. I got this. Open your hands. Open your hands. And so then they finally put me in a room upstairs and I was completely isolated, like completely. Everything took forever. I like just eating lunch would take an hour and a half to do because I'd have to like take a bite, chew it, breathe, and then like pull my mask away, take another bite, breathe. You know, it was terrible. It took forever. I couldn't get up to use the bathroom because every time I would move, my saturation would tank. My heart would start racing. The monitors would start screaming. people would run in and be like, are you okay? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I just can't breathe. yeah, it was wild. And I tried to keep a good attitude. That's just my natural default setting. But yeah, they finally were like,
yeah, okay.
Anyway. Basically, the point is that I was there doing all of this, trying to keep a good attitude alone, while the enemy was just pouring lies and fear. And, I mean, like, eventually they had to put me on a catheter because I couldn't even get out of bed anymore to use the bathroom. And that was awful, being in there alone, trying to text my family and let them know I'm sending them stupid, goofy pictures, making the most ridiculous faces in them, just so that they would know that, yeah, yeah, that day. So, yeah, I had been there for about a week alone, and the nurses came rushing in, because I crashed. Nothing was getting me. Every day they had been cranking my oxygen. I couldn't get enough in my system. So they put me on this BiPAP machine. And it's that horrible huge picture with this horrible huge headgear. And it was terrifying. If you have claustrophobia at all, good luck. Because they have to humidify the air. Because everything in here was just so crusty that I couldn't get any oxygen through the mucus. It was disgusting. And my head is being pinched. I didn't wear my contacts because I didn't know if I could get them in or out or not. So I'm sitting with my glasses. And like one of my biggest fears is not being able to see. So I'm figuring out how to finagle my glasses while trying to wear this thing. And so it's like bruising my nose and like the hot air blowing in on you. And I'm clawing at my face. And I'm desperate with fear and anxiety. And the nurses are coming in. They're putting fans on either side of my bed just to cool me off so that I could stay in the mask and not like flip out. And then I send those pictures to my family of the headgear with me grinning because I can't let my family see that I am terrified at this point. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat or drink. I was in that thing for 40 hours, just laying there. The only thing I could do was listen to worship music, read my Bible, because TV was just a whole other sort of source of stimuli that I just couldn't do.
And at that point, you've been alone, other than doctors and nurses, for several days.
Yeah.
And I think that was the day that your family tried to pull something off.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, they knew. I think they saw through my ruse with my funny pictures. They came, and I told them, I'm like, I can see the parking lot. But so I'm telling you where you, I told, I'm giving them directions on where I can see. No, you turned the wrong direction. Turn around. Yes, now I can see you. And so they're waving at me from the parking lot.
So this is your view from your room?
That was my view. And then the next day they came and did it again and brought a big old huge sign. We found out from the nurses that they could drop me off a bag of goodies, and that they would deliver it to me. So they, one of the days Eric brought me a big old coffee, which of course sent my tachycardia through the roof, and we learned I can't have coffee, which if you know me, that's really, really bad if I can't have coffee.
It's a thought that counts, Eric.
Yes.
Good job.
But the kids made me notes, and they colored me things to put up on the walls, and I'm just sitting there like, ugly crying all by myself, and the nurses come in again to check on me, and they're like, honey, are you okay? Yes, my family just really loves me. But it was exactly what I needed. And God was there for me the whole time. You know, there was a couple of days there before they came to see me that the isolation was getting to me. And like, I just was praying. And immediately I opened my eyes and I looked out my window. And there's 4 hot air balloons just going right up outside of my window. And like, I'm obsessed with hot air balloons. I just love them. I love October in Albuquerque. It's the most beautiful thing to me. And so it was just like a personal gift from God right then in that moment. Like, I see you. I'm there for you. Just keep opening your hands. I'm here.
Awesome. So November 28th is a Sunday.
Yes.
And I remember we were trying to figure out how to stay connected to you as well as your church family. Your family and your church family. We were all trying to kind of figure that out. And so you guys actually reminded me. So we went back and we found the clip. Tyler found the clip from Sunday the 28th. For those that were here, we took communion that day. But in fact, let's watch this clip real quick, because I actually mentioned you in this clip. So do we have that?
I know that our
online audience has already been welcomed. I want to welcome you as well. And I'm going to tell our online audience, this is your warning that we're going to be doing communion at the end of service. And so if you're here, you don't have to worry about this. We're ready for you. But if you're watching online, you might need to run to your kitchen and find something liquid and something solid to do communion with there as you're watching with us. So I can't wait to talk to Jen later and see what she does communion with us today. She's watching online. So what did you do communion with in the hospital with us on November 28th? What did you use?
I had orange juice and I think it was pancakes.
That is awesome.
Best communion ever.
I remember later that day or later that week, you messaged us and you said, hey, I was watching. I took communion with you from the hospital room. Yeah. And it was crazy just for me. How connected that made Lisa and I feel to you and your family, and so I can only imagine you in the hospital room, you know, worshiping along with us through your mask, and grabbing orange juice and pancakes and applying the power of the blood there in your hospital room.
Well, and that day was a miracle.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Because
there was a breakthrough that day.
Yeah, huge breakthrough. So I'm sitting there in that giant fancy headgear. And I had been for 40 hours. And I'm like, come on, Jesus. Like, I had been able to figure out how to eat finally. But the lady and the nurses came into my room. And the respiratory specialist, she just leans over my bed. And she looks at me. And she's like, honey, you're not doing so good. And if you don't get any better, we're going to have to look at the ICU. Because this isn't working. And I just stopped and I just looked at her and I just, right then and there, a thought hit me. I just need to blow my nose. Which for 2 weeks I had not been able to do successfully because it was just too much congestion. But that 40 hours of humidity in that mask, it did the trick. Because after begging and begging, just let me take it off, please. I took it off and I was able to blow my nose and I got out all of the stuff.
Do we have a picture of that? I'm teasing. No.
I'm sparing you the nasty. But I could breathe, and I was just like, I wanted to cry because being able to breathe through your nose is such a thing we take for granted. It's breathing. We just do it. And I hadn't been able to. And so the staff was just staring at the monitors, and I just remember watching their eyes get really big, and the eyebrows are climbing up here. Because she's just watching me stabilize for the first time. I'm not getting worse. And then that's when they brought me the breakfast. And that's when I had, because I'd been watching a service and I hadn't reached the point. I paused it literally right then so that she could come in and tell me this stuff. I blow my nose. She leaves the room. I press play on the church service, finish watching it all. Take communion while I'm eating there for the first time in 40 hours. And she comes in a little bit later with this big fat cannula. It's called a high flow. And so they put me back on that. My nose, all of it is black and blue. And I looked like a preteen because I was so broke out from it. But like, you can just see I'm tired, but I am so happy.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah, I got to brush my teeth afterwards, and that was like the best thing ever. Don't take brushing your teeth for granted, y'all.
And meanwhile, your family they're juggling their schedules, and they're trying to keep things together, and they're doing all their stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. My kids all learned how to do laundry that while I was in the hospital.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they were helping Eric out. They were sanitizing the house and figuring out how to wash the sheets and the towels and how do we sanitize the couches because we'd all had COVID and they wanted to get it out of the house. So they're getting better at the same time. You know, thank God for all of y'all who participate in the meal train because you took care of my family when I was not able to, and I will never have enough words to say thank you for that.
That's awesome. So December 7th is another big date in your story. So tell us what happens December 7th.
Well, a couple of days before that, they finally were just stunned. They're just like, we don't know what's going on here. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I serve a God who loves me. I'm a miracle because he loves me and he loves you too. Like taking care of every opportunity to say those words because they were so true. And so finally they put me on the Salter cannula, which is this itty bitty little, it's still bigger than a normal one, which you can tell I'm super excited about that one. And so they finally were able to ease back the flow. And they were like, if you can stay on this and not desaturate when you move around, when you, they took out the catheter and they're like, when you go to the potty, if you don't drop that much, maybe you can go home. And so I'm just like, please, Jesus, please, Jesus. So I'm sitting there wearing that, and I'm able to do all of those things. And they're finally starting to talk going home. And so then December 7th, boom, baby, I got to go home.
Awesome.
It was amazing.
That's huge.
Yeah. So that day, I got to hug my husband and my kids for the first time in 13 days. 13 days without a hug really is not fun. I got to take a shower, but I had to climb the stairs to do that, which was ridiculous because I'd lost 26 pounds.
Wow.
Having not walked at all in 13 days. I was super wobbly. It was loads of fun. But my amazing husband got my hair clean for me because I couldn't even lift my arms over my head. I was just too weak. I really could not do anything by myself. I would walk like 10 feet and just have to stop and breathe. And then another 10 feet and stop and breathe. And just another 10 feet, you know, every so often. Because if I didn't, then again, stars, dots, black shadows, wobbly, dizzy. It was a miracle to go home, but the battle was definitely not over.
You had a long ways to go. So your family makes some adjustments. You have a two-story house,
yeah.
So... They make a pallet in the living room, and I think for 20 or so days, you more or less lived kind of in the living room, like that area. You just kind of stayed there.
Oh, I lived downstairs until March.
Okay, so until March, a lot longer.
Yeah, I could go upstairs maybe every 3 or 4 days to take a shower.
Yeah, so I remember it was about this time. I stopped by once, and Lisa stopped by a separate time, mm-hmm. and we both had a very similar experience, and essentially we stopped by, and you were so starved for company that you were just, you didn't want us to leave. You were so excited, and you were just talking, but while you were talking, we were pretty sure we were going to kill you. Like, it felt like Lisa called me, she goes, I hope I didn't just kill Jen. I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, she wouldn't let me leave. She kept talking, but she also couldn't breathe. Like you know, it was kind of a funny moment. And then Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about this Christmas, because you'll never have another Christmas like this.
Yeah. So this was like the first Christmas. Yeah, you can see my palette. We're sitting there. I ordered a tree because we'd been wanting a new tree. And I thought, why do I keep putting it off just because it's expensive? I want this tall, skinny tree. I'm just going to get the tall, skinny tree.
I almost died. I deserve a tall, skinny tree. Right?
So I ordered it, and Eric and the kids put it together. And they're sitting there putting the ornaments on it. And I'm like, move that one to the left. I'm ordering Christmas presents online. Eric, what do you think about this one? Should we get this one for so-and-so? And we literally are just dropping stuff into the cart everywhere because I couldn't leave. I barely could get up to go to the bathroom, so there was no way I was going to be going shopping. And I'm not going to put my family through that torture either, considering that they have been through this, maybe not right by my side, but they were with me the whole time. So it was wild.
Yeah. So about this time, I stopped by the house, mm-hmm. and I brought some Gatorades and talked to Eric for a few minutes. And I was trying to keep in touch with Eric and not bother you and kind of, but also like know what's going on. And I remember that day, Eric had a prayer request. He said, Pastor, Jen needs to see a pulmonologist, but we can't find one. They're booked months out, and we're just having the hardest time. And I remember, you know, saying, hey, we're going to pray.
Yeah.
And this is just how I do. I'm like, I'm going to pray, but I'm also going to call everybody I know. And all the pulmonologists I know, which is zero. And so I remember leaving, and I started calling people who I thought might know a pulmonologist, right? I knew I didn't know one, but I was like, and this is just, I'm like, I'm going to pray, but I'm also going to like beat down every door. We're finding you a pulmonologist, right? And so we went to work, but a lot of people went to work, and one of them was Eric called his dad. So your father-in-law goes to work, and this is another. So this whole story, if you're not, I'm sure you're feeling it. It's high and then low and then high and then low, low, low and then high. And then, I mean, it's a roller coaster, right? So
absolutely.
Tell us about this one.
So my father-in-law is amazing.
And he got in touch with a nurse that he still keeps in touch with from the cancer center. And he tells her what we need. And she goes, well, let me call over the pulmonology side. And I kid you not, she calls him back and says, we've got a cancellation and we can fit her in because we just had that cancellation 2 minutes ago before I called.
Wow.
They can fit you in 2 days.
So awesome.
It was wild. So we get there, and then I was able to walk in. This is 1 month to the day of being released from the hospital. I walked in without a wheelchair, which was a huge victory. And then they were like, okay, we need you to do a 6-minute walk test. Literally walking for 6 minutes on oxygen, and every few feet when I start to drop too low, they crank it up so that they can tell you how much oxygen you actually need. So I do that. I'm exhausted by this time. I'm like, can I please just go take a 3-hour nap and come back? That'd be great. Mm-hmm. And she walks me into this room, and there's this giant plastic coffin standing on its end is what it felt like. And I had a full-blown panic attack moment in that minute. And I say full-blown panic attack, but even then it's not really fully panic attack because I've had those before and it was different. Because there's, I don't know if you know this, there's the spiritual and mental side of anxiety, and then there's also the biological component. The biological component is very easily treated with medications and things like that. It's two separate animals. It really, really is. And I know this because in that hospital room, when I'm laying there surrendering to Christ,
again,
he took the anxiety out of me.
Wow.
It was gone. All I dealt with in the hospital was the biological component because while my heart is racing and while I'm feeling like I'm breathing shallow, in my head and in my spirit, I know it's not the same. I know he's got me. I know he's walking me through it. I know that. So there was a peace under the anxiety. So I'm having this panic attack like, oh, and I just feel like, okay, no, I'm going to do this. Lord, you're going to have to help me get through this because this coffin is going to kill me. But I got through it because I couldn't see the doctor without doing it. So we got into the doctor's office, and he's reviewing all of the results of the test, and he was just like, yeah, you're at about 38% lung function and capacity.
38%.
And he looked at Eric and I, and he said, you know, worst case right now, if you don't get any better, we're looking at a lung transplant in your future. We basically didn't hear much of anything after that,
yeah.
Because how can you?
Yeah.
But he said, just keep moving. Keep moving, move around, put on the oxygen, wear it all the time, crank that baby up. It does not matter how high you have to crank it, how much oxygen you need does not matter. Move. So I moved.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Eric calling and telling me, and I my memory, that was one of the most frustrating moments that I remember with Eric, because it was just like, there are no answers, and now they're talking about a lung transplant.
Yeah.
But that moment didn't last long. Like, no. You both just kind of said, we're going to do everything, we're going to keep doing what we can do, and we're going to keep trusting the Lord.
Yes.
And so you're doing laps in your living room, you're doing stair climbs when you can, you're yeah. still on the oxygen.
Yeah.
And then February, we're just keeping the story moving. February 20th was your first Sunday back at church.
Yes.
We were super excited. You actually texted us that week. You said we're coming back. And tell me what you remember about coming back that first Sunday.
I remember being excited, like ridiculously excited. I'm an ambivert, so I'm kind of extroverted, but then I get really tired like an introvert. And so I was just ready. I was like, Tigger is coming to visit Harvest. And then they sing, I'm going to see a victory. And I had not heard that song before. And so we're just singing it. And I'm like, I am all in with this right now. Every word to that song was just, I'm going to sing it. And I'm sitting there like.
And you still have oxygen.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You had a,
oh, and
you
I'm,
had a tank.
I'm gasping at this point. Yeah. When I talk, I can get like 10 words out. And I'm, here's some more words. Here's some more words. It was, I don't know, some of you probably remember that. I remember people coming during huggy time, and they're like...
Huggy time.
I don't know what else to call it. I call it huggy time, sorry.
We don't call it that.
I love hugs.
Just so you know. So.
Yeah.
Enjoy
greeting
time.
So the people are coming up to me and they're like, I don't know if I can hug you. And I'm like, give me a hug. I went 13 days without a hug. Give me a hug, please.
That's awesome. So Jen, I have to ask you, you know, at that point, if anybody had an excuse not to come back to church, it was y'all. Like no one would have second guessed at all. No one was, you know, we weren't calling like, hey, when are you guys coming back? You know, so I just have to ask. I mean, that was an effort. I mean, that was a lot of work. I remember later that day, you know, you were like exhausted. You took a big nap. I mean, it was a lot of work. Why did you decide to come back at that point?
Well, like I said, I need people. So there was that. And there is absolutely no replacement for in-person worship. There is something beautiful hearing voices, seeing people raising their hands in surrender, seeing people engaging with each other and with the Lord. That is the biggest blessing ever. And you cannot replace that from behind a screen. You just can't. We can try, and I did try, and it's better than nothing, but it was not enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
I needed community.
Yeah.
And... We needed to prove, you know, because anxiety still tries to creep in, even though you know you've been healed of it. It still tries to creep in and eat your lunch every so often. And so we just knew we're going to step out of faith. We're going to go. We're not going to be afraid of people. Just because I had COVID does not mean I'm going to, you know, catch it again. And even if I do catch it again, he got me through once. He's going to get me through again and again and however many times until it's his decision to take me home.
Yeah.
So we walked out in faith.
And I think when you came back, we were talking about we don't do life alone.
Yes.
And so you came back as we're talking about our value of community. And I know that the community meant a lot to you and Eric and your family. To talk to me about, I guess specifically because we're at Harvest this morning. Talk about how did Harvest help you, you know, through this time in your life? And probably, I should probably ask Eric that, but you're up here, so talk to us about it.
Well, like I said before, y'all took care of my family when I could not, and that was huge. But that was 2 weeks, and normally, that's about how long a meal train can sustain. It's pretty much standard everywhere, you know? And so that was coming to a close, and I was nowhere near ready to cook. I think I tried to chop about 2 weeks after. I tried to chop vegetables, and it was just like, wham. All right, nope, I'm out. I can't do it. And they're back at school. They're back at work. They're doing the things. Yeah. It's basketball season. They couldn't do it all. So we're ordering stuff, and meal gift cards just start showing up. And then Kendra restarted the meal train for us. And so more of y'all brought food. And... then I had people from Eric's work came, and they brought food, or they brought meal gift cards. And let me just tell y'all, if you're on the fence because you don't want to do meal train because you don't cook, restaurant gift cards or Grubhub gift cards or whatever are the best thing ever, because when you are exhausted and you just want to have a choice. I love the prepared meals are just a huge, 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 huge blessing, especially if you can come back and eat leftovers later. But every now and then, having the ability to choose what you eat when you don't have much of a choice in anything else is a blessing. So call Kendra and get on the meal train, please. Just plugging the ministry for y'all. Just do it. Just do it, because it was everything to us. And then... and we had other people, you know, I had other friends, you know, I got texts while I was in the hospital of people who had come, and they're like, I'm in the parking lot and I'm praying right now. They didn't know which room I was in, but it was just like knowing they were there was a huge blessing.
Awesome.
So all of that. And then authors in the Christian fiction community actually came together and they pooled a bunch of donations, and they covered a huge chunk of some of my medical bills. And it was just stuff like that. You know, I had a few people who were making hats for me because with COVID, your hair falls out. And mine was coming out fast from like February until like
April. It was just coming out in wads. And I was like super bald right around here on my hairline. So it's coming in now. But for a few months there, I was wearing hats. And so people were sewing hats and bringing them to me. And it was amazing. So community was everything.
That's so awesome. So the pulmonologist says 38% lung capacity.
Yeah.
We don't know if you'll get better. We might start thinking about lung transplant. You go to work, pray. We're moving along. You just had a follow up.
Yes.
Just like real recently.
Yeah.
So I mean, obviously you're doing better because you're sitting here. But tell us what the doctor said just most recently.
Well, so I'll go back. I had a follow-up in April, and I had been in rehab for a month. And so at that point, he said I was at 70%, which was a miracle. And then between April and October, he didn't want to see me again, so I knew I had a lot of hard work to do. So I finished out rehab several days a week, just basically working out, lots and lots of cardio, some weight and strength training and stuff like that, too. Finished all of that, continued to go to the gym, which for the first time in my life, I'm actually willingly going to the gym. So there is a side benefit there. And then in October, he looks at me and he goes, "You are this close to back to normal."
Wow.
So I'm almost there. The day I finished rehab, Dr. Ramo actually asked me if he could video record my testimony of how I had improved in rehab, because the first day of rehab, I could walk for 1 minute on the treadmill before desaturating. I went 2 minutes on the elliptical. I think I did like 5 minutes on the bike before I was dying, and all of this was on significant amounts of oxygen. A few months later, when I finished rehab, I showed an 800% improvement. I was able to do like 30 or 40 minutes on the elliptical with minimal oxygen. I could go however much I wanted on the bike without a whole lot of oxygen. I was doing all of those things that there was no way I could have done just, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months ago before that. So it was pretty amazing.
That's awesome. So I have a text message. They might have a screenshot of this. And it's kind of funny because this is the last text message is you telling us, "Hey, I'm sorry." This is back when you had to cancel the life group, and then the next text message is in July 18th,
yeah.
And that Sunday I mentioned Run for the Light, and you text and said, "Giving you a heads up now, I'm gonna want the details on Run for the Light. I'm in." And I remember Lisa and I are at lunch after church, and I get this text, and I'm like, "Lisa, you will not believe who the very first person to text me about Run for the Light is. Jen Weaver. Jen, still recovering from COVID, Weaver. Jen, oxygen tank." I was just like freaking out. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And so in September, you did it. I call it Run for the Light, and you were like, "Well, I kind of walked it, but who cares? Check it out."
Yep.
Check it out. You did the full 5K.
I did the full 5K. I went ahead and preemptively wore my oxygen because I didn't want to have to use my handy-dandy monitor like every 5 seconds. But when I went to see the doctor in October, I told him that I had walked the 5K, and he said, "Awesome. When are you going to do another one?" And he said, and I asked him about it, and he goes, "So feel free. The next time you're at the gym from now on, if you want to train for another 5K, do another 5K. You don't need the oxygen anymore."
So you're going to do another 5K? Or
walk another 5K because I'm not going to run unless something's chasing me. But
we could lose something to chase you. I'm just saying, you know. So you did the 5K, and then... And then we just started a life group called Parents Who Pickleball.
Yep.
And you and Eric have been coming out and playing pickleball as well.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this really is just a miracle story.
Yeah.
And this is where I wanna end, and then I wanna pray for those that are fighting fear and worry and anxiety. So you know, you said to me, you know, the physical, you know, healing, the miracle, is not even the best part. No. Like, it, obviously, that we had to tell that story because that's part of it. But you said that's not the best part. So tell me what you mean by that. What is the best part of this miracle story?
So knowing that I have a testimony now, that I can, every time I open my hand and I look at the palm of my hand, I can be there in that moment. And I can say, God saved my life. But he didn't just save my life. He took that lifelong struggle with fear and anxiety, and he yanked it out of me, and he filled me back up with himself. Mm. And he is with me. He walks with me every minute. So now when somebody's like, aren't you afraid of getting it again? I'm like, no. Why not? Because God healed me, and I know he'll do it again. And if he doesn't, I'm okay.
Yeah.
It literally doesn't compute anymore. I cannot understand how to fear and be afraid anymore.
That's so
and that
awesome.
Is the weirdest thing I ever thought I would say. It is bizarre. But I literally can't compute it anymore. And freedom like that is something I've never understood. And I have been a Christian my entire life.
Wow. It's awesome.
So...
So you said something to me about that you say yes to everything now.
Yes. So when you started preaching on All In a couple of years ago, Eric and I looked at each other at that point and we were like, we've been holding back. We've been holding back our involvement. We've been holding back ourselves. We have been in our little bubble, not really trying to make friends, not really trying to get involved in church. We're just warming our seats and we just need to stop doing that. So we started going all in during All In, mm-hmm. but it was like wearing training wheels. You know, we're just kind of like, okay, we'll say yes. And now that I'm better and I am capable of doing the things that we weren't sure I would ever get to do, it's like, we're just going to say yes to everything and trust that God's going to give us the resources to make it happen, whether it's generosity with our money or generosity with our time, generosity with our spirits, with who I am as a human being. If there's something I can impart to another person, I want to do that because I really am all in now.
That is so awesome. Wow. What a great story. Did you enjoy this today? Oh my goodness. Jen, thank you so much. So much. Worship team, why don't you come back up and help me? And I think we're actually going to sing, I'm going to see a victory. Is that right? Is that right? Okay. All right. Church, why don't you stand with me this morning? Did you enjoy hearing this testimony? So awesome. So here's what we're going to do. We took a little extra time. By the way, Eric and Jen and girls and family, and thank y'all for being here today. We're so honored to just be able to walk with you and your family through this time. So I asked earlier, oh, shoot, Jen, come back up here. This is a gift for you for completing Run for the Light 5K, all right? Everyone else, we knew they'd finish. We didn't know if you'd finish, so that's for you. It's been so many times, I'm like, we're going to kill her. Oh, my gosh. So we asked earlier, we said, hey, how many of you have ever battled, you know, fear, worry, anxiety, and I don't know, 85% of the room raised their hands. And then I went out on a limb. I said, how many of you would say you're facing something right now? And there was quite a number of you. And I just really, I felt pretty strongly a few weeks ago as Jen ran to me and she said, living with open hands saved my life. I'm like, oh, we gotta help save some more lives. We gotta help some people to overcome the fear, the worry, the anxiety that you might be facing. And so what we're going to do is we're going to sing this song that gave Jen and her family so much hope. And what I do know is it's hard in the moment when you're facing that thing that's up against you. It's hard to see beyond it and to say, you know what, I'm in the middle, but I'm going to see a victory. God is he's gonna come through. He's gonna do it. But I will say this, I think one of the easiest places to do that is in church. I think one of the easiest places to do that is surrounded by friends who have a similar faith, with a worship team that's ready to lead you to that place, with a pastor who's ready to believe with you and pray with you. And so what I'd like to do is, while we sing this song, if you are willing, if you want to battle that fear, that anxiety, that worry today, as we sing this, would you step out from where you are and meet me here at the altar? Because here's I'm going to tie two of our values together, okay? We live with open hands, and we don't do life alone. You know, one of the scariest places to be is alone, right? One of the most anxious places to be is alone. One of the most worrisome places to be is alone. And so today we're saying to you, you are not in this alone. We're gonna do this together, and we're gonna sing this song, we're gonna declare victory, and then I'm gonna pray over you, and then you can go to lunch or whatever, go run a 5K or you know, whatever you want to do today. So worship team, would you lead us this morning? And if you are ready to overcome your fear, worry, and anxiety, just come meet me down here, and we're gonna begin to pray.
Thank you for listening to the Harvest Fellowship podcast. For more information, visit harvestabq.org.